We must dispatch the scoundrels with all due haste and return to free our companions.
Watch feet. Jack jumped out of the shallow pit, cutting across the abandoned lots. Their pursuit was still having trouble spotting them, or they would have fired a shot or two by now, either to try to pin them down or steer them into the trap. Having split up, they were even less likely to fire for fear of hitting each other in the dark. The hunters were playing it safe, being patient, using their knowledge of the terrain. Short of some kind of lucky break, Jack figured their plan would be to tree the quarry, send back for reinforcements, and wait until daylight to finish them off. Jack would have none of that. It was a big, dark world out there, his world, but it wouldn't be dark very much longer. The gridwork of streets turned into plowed fields. Jack and Doc raced over the soft tilled earth through waist-high corn. In the distance, the stars reflected in the placid lake. Everything was breathlessly still, as if they were moving across a painting or a photograph. When they reached the pre-dark highway, Jack headed for the row of grain elevators surrounded by the fields of corn. Off to the right, about 100 yards away, he caught movement, a pair of runners angling in, trying to cut them off. There was no good cover before they reached the silos, and no good place to set up a counter trap. He picked up the pace, his lank white hair streaming back from his head. With his long legs, Doc managed to keep up, but just barely. He was breathing in ragged gasps by the time they got to the silos.
Oh, by the three Kennedys, I should have undertaken a strenuous exercise regimen before Sky Dark. At least something for the respiratory system.
Sure, Doc.
The towering grain elevators hadn't fared well, what with the deluge and reemergence. The six cylinders weren't made of tempered concrete like the redoubt. They had all weathered, particularly around the metal fittings, which had rusted away, giving the elements access to the softer interior and allowing erosion to set in. The silos at either end of the row had taken the brunt of the retreating water's suction, suffering impacts from floating debris, as well as the scouring action of churning rock and sand. Their external ladders had been swept away, as had their inspection doors and domed roofs. The storage units abutted each other, sharing common walls, so there was no way to pass between them, which was to Jack and Doc's advantage. It bought them a little time out of sight of the hunters. Jack and Doc rounded the end of the row and ran along the far side to a line of grain carts, dual-axled, four-wheeled, with long yokes and multiple crossposts, carts designed to be pulled by human beings. They stopped beside them and did a quick wreck. A 20-foot-wide ring of bare, pounded dirt surrounded the bases of the silos. More waist-high cornfield stretched off to the lake and dam. There was no decent cover that way. To go farther meant risking getting driven against the sheer walls of the dam or the canyon. The best hope, the last hope, was at their backs. The hunters would know that too, and expect them to make their stand at the silos. Jack looked at the grain scattered on the ground and trampled into it. It made a light-colored path from the carts to the side of the fourth elevator.
Real folk using that one, Doc.
He scanned the ladder that ran the entire length of the cylinder and disappeared over the top.
Door there.
He pointed at a 3-by-3-foot square of dark metal, about 25 feet above the ground.
Yes, I see it. It is an inspection door, I believe. What is your idea?
No idea. Trick.
There wasn't time to explain further. Jack scampered as quick as a cat up the rusted ladder to the inspection door. It had a bolt for a lock. He slid it back and opened the door wide. The sweet smell of grain wafted up to him from inside. The job done, he scurried back down the ladder and pulled Doc by the arm.
We go in field. Two come that side, three come other way. See door, think we're inside. Maybe go up ladder to close to lock us in. We take them from behind, from field, with blades. Won't expect that. You go that way, use carts as cover.
They split up after jumping through the first row of corn. As Doc moved away, he unsheathed his sword stick. Jack sprinted in the opposite direction, the leaves rustling softly against his legs. As he approached the last silo, he stopped and ducked into a squat. He shook a pair of leaf-bladed knives from his sleeve. Jack had hunted small game with the wicked blade since he was a little boy. He had absolute confidence in his ability to put them exactly where he wanted them to go. Leaning forward between the stalks, he had a view of the entire side of the grain elevators. He saw the two men come around the last silo, giving it a wide berth. They had their hand blasters in both hands and aimed, looking for an immediate ambush, which wasn't there. Jack turned and saw three more hunters closing in. This bunch moved quickly to the cover of the carts. The first pair, meanwhile, stopped at the second silo. They were keeping distance between them, instead of bunching up, which would have made them easier targets. They weren't triple stoops. Now would have been the time to blast the bastards, with their backs to the silos, but blaster fire would have alerted the Vill and made it harder to free their companions. Jack listened hard, and heard the hunters' hushed conversation.
Where'd they go? Did you check under the carts?
Nothing there. Nothing under them or in them.
They gotta be here.
Shit, look at the inspection door. We never leave it open.
Think we found our rabbits.
Just in case we didn't, you two sweep the field. Shoot to kill.
The two men crossed the bare stretch of ground and disappeared in the corn to Jack's left. His plan was in need of some fine-tuning. Jack picked up a clod of earth and lobbed it into the field in the direction of the dam.
Over there! Pan out!
They moved quickly, working deeper into the field, stepping over and looking down the corn rows. They weren't trying to be stealthy. They were trying to spook their quarry into breaking cover and making a run for it. Jack waited a few seconds, then crab-walked toward them. He couldn't see them, but he could hear them. He slipped between the rows like a ghost. They weren't looking his way, so they couldn't see the tops of the plants move. And the men by the silo were too far away from the action to see what was about to happen and shout a warning. Even so, Jack couldn't risk chucking another dirt clod to bring them closer. He wanted to keep their backs to him. He circled around, anticipating their direction of travel, and putting himself in position to strike. Squatting, he let the nearest man get even with him, three or four rows over. He used the man's footsteps to time his attack. When he had the rhythm, he popped up to a half crouch and sent a throwing knife flying. The hunter had his back turned in a three-quarter view. Caught in mid-stride, there was no way he could whirl and fire his pistol. The knife hit him in the side of the neck with enough force to make him stagger. Jack could see the pointed black shape sticking out below the man's ear. It was a jugular hit. The hunter automatically reached up and tore out the object. Big mistake. Blood gushed from the side of his neck. He never got out a word. A brain without blood is just a lump of spongy meat. His legs gave way, and sat down in the dirt. Before his butt hit the ground, Jack was back in a squat and moving down the row, circling behind the other man.
Terry? Where the hell are you? This isn't funny.
Here.
Jack rose to his full height, his arm flying forward. He really put some mustard on it. The leaf-bladed knife curved left to right. The second man turned just in time to catch the steel star full in the forehead. The point penetrated bone deep enough to stun, but not deep enough to kill him outright. Jack high-hurdled the corn and threw a shoulder into the bigger man's gut, driving him to his back on the ground. Before the man could cry out, Jack clamped a hand over his mouth. Then Jack dragged the edge of another knife across the front of the man's throat from ear to ear and held him down until he stopped kicking. Doc hunkered down in an uncomfortable crouch, his legs folded under him, his sword ready in his hand. Parting the leaves slightly, he peered across the open ground at the three men standing by the grain carts. If it was difficult for him to see them in the dim light, it was infinitely harder for them to see him amid the stalks.
All to the good.
As the two other men moved into the corn, he cocked an ear, eavesdropping on the conversation of the trio that remained beside the grain elevators. They had all turned to face the fourth silo and were looking up at the inspection door.
One of us has to climb up there and shut that door.
But he made no move to do so.
Lock the bastards in. Then we can take our nuke in time chilling them.
That ladder don't look too sturdy. It better not be me that climbs it. Might not hold my weight.
From what Doc could see, the man had cause for concern.
It could be some kind of trick, leaving it open like that. It could be waiting for the first one to try the ladder. Pop out the door and shoot him dead before he gets halfway up.
Oh, we can handle that. The two that don't go up just draw a bead on the door. If something moves up there, blast it.
So, who's going?
You're the worst shot, Fisher, so you get to do the climbing.
He took a position at the front of the line of carts, and the second man moved around to Doc's side, squatting and bracing his auto pistol against the cart.
Go on now. We've got your back.
Fuck.
Fisher stuffed his revolver in his waistband and lumbered toward the ladder. From behind Doc, out in the field, there was a scuffling sound. It was over so quickly, they might have imagined it.
What's that?
Terry? Bill? You all right? Damn, I can't see them anymore.
There was no answer from the field. The tall man didn't want to yell louder, as that could draw gunfire his way from the darkness.
Shit, get it over with, Fisher.
Fisher began to climb. Doc waited until he was almost all the way to the inspection door before he moved from the corn, his sword point held low into the rear, his body coiled for the strike. He crossed the gap in three long strides. The man on his side of the carts sensed his approach at the last instant and turned, trying to bring his weapon to bear. The thrust had to be perfect, and it was. The blade slid over the man's wrist, through the center of his chest, and skewered him, splitting his heart. The only sound was the slither of steel on bone. Doc ripped the blade free and let the man fall. He spun to his left and dashed for the last cart, keeping low so the tall man couldn't see him coming. Above them, the heavyset man on the ladder was cautiously reaching for the door. Doc rounded the cart on a dead run, catching the tall man kneeling with his back turned and his weapon aimed up at the silo. Like a bullfighter, Doc knew exactly where to place the blade. Behind the right arm, 5 inches below the armpit, at a slight down angle. Instantaneous kill stroke.
You fuckers!
Doc looked up to see the man hanging on the ladder with one hand and drawing a long-barreled revolver from the front of his pants with the other. Doc realized he had no choice but to return fire. Dropping to a knee beside the man he had just killed, he hauled out his Lama and took aim. Something swished through the air high overhead. The man on the ladder stiffened, his gun hand dropped, and his body fell. He crashed to the ground head first, raising a cloud of dust. Doc stepped over, his sword ready for a coup de grace, but the neck of the man in question was clearly broken. Doc wiped his blade on the dead man's shirt.
All your trials are over, my friend.
Getting light.
To the east, the sky was already starting to turn lavender.
Sun up soon.
Doc retrieved his ebony scabbard. They couldn't see what was going on from ground level, so they climbed the ladder to the top of a silo. From the domed roof, they had a perfect view of the end of the square, and everything between. It looked like the entire population had turned out for the procession, which was slowly leaving the town center and heading in their direction.
By the three Kennedys, this bodes ill.
Ryan and JB were at the head of the file, their hands tied behind their backs. Ryan didn't see the man with the broken leg hang himself with his bandages. If anybody in the jail saw him, they hadn't tried to stop it. The other prisoners kept themselves busy moaning over their injuries and lamenting their fates, and blaming Ryan and JB for both. Ex-Pilgrim Wicklaw was especially vocal. He who had lost too much, wives, position, teeth, toes, was now poised to lose everything else. Ryan had tried to get more information from him about Jubilee's demons, but like her, he claimed to know very little. To hear him tell it, what the demons were and what they did were secrets sealed inside the dam, and rightfully so. The only thing Wicklaw could add was the reason why he and the other wounded were to be offered. Demons liked their food alive, which was undoubtedly why the man with the broken leg had hanged himself. Shortly after the other prisoners joined them, and the moaning and lamenting kicked into high gear, Jubilee had retreated into a corner and curled up like a pill bug. There was nothing Ryan could do or say to comfort her. And comfort was misplaced effort at this point. Ryan shut out the ranting of the other prisoners and withdrew into himself to a place of calm. A piece of high ground to wreck from. He was looking for an opportunity, and as always, he was patient, expecting it to come, and ready to take hold of it when it did. JB was doing the same thing, he knew. Eyes open, brain churning. Survival was part luck, part skill, part hard experience. They had learned that from their years backing up Trader, Deathland's legendary convoy master. Based on his own experience, Ryan couldn't swallow the idea that Little Pueblo's demons might be some kind of avenging eternal spirits. The hellscape was dark and twisted territory, full of nuke-spawned predators that fed upon the weak and the strong alike. Real predators, not ghosts. This wasn't the first time he'd come across people convinced that the horror show monsters that plagued them were more than flesh and blood. It was a way of dealing with their powerlessness and fear. But in the end, those predators, no matter how large, how numerous, or how terrible their weapons, were always killable. Ryan knew, because he had killed them, by the wagload.